Right on the button, guys. Right
here, last
guys.
Stone for Kevin Martin. They want it on the button. The fans are on their feet. Kevin Martin goes out as a champion.
Oh, yeah. Folks, I'm giggling. I'm laughing. I'm excited. Hi again, everybody. It's Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you with a very, very welcomed episode of Inside Curling. This is the week of the Scotties Tournament of Hearts, the Scott Tournament of Hearts. And it's hard to believe that they pulled it off, but it's well underway. We record on Tuesdays. And so we certainly don't. We're in the middle of the week of the Scotties, but congratulations to everyone for pulling this thing off and to Curling Canada. And I'm really looking forward to getting Warren and Kevin's insight into what's going on. So there's a couple of stories that have already unfolded sort of almost midweek through here. And we got to welcome in our, as I call them, the Sultans of Sweep. Okay. The heroes of the hack, the old bear and the old wise one, Kevin Martin, welcome back. The greatest curler in the world, World Hall of Famer. Kevin, the old bear, and of course, Warren, another World Curling Hall of Famer, Warren Hansen, who's, I'm going to call you the wise one, Warren. No. All right.
Jim, through all this, what do we call you? Yeah.
I'll tell you what I feel like, Warren. This is our 45th show. Okay. And I always feel like I'm in trouble when you talk to me. Okay. Cause I was in trouble for so many years when I did the prior patch. And I feel like I'm Grasshopper off of the show Kung Fu. You've been teaching me stuff over these. I'm going to be in trouble again. Okay, I'm going to be in trouble again. But boys, what a great week! The Scotties is underway. We're going to talk about that. We've got a special guest, Tanner Horgan from Sudbury, Ontario, who's an up and comer. You may ask, why do we not have anyone on from the Scotties? Well, the reason is we don't want to bug them during play. Most of them don't want to be interviewed, and so we're leaving them alone. So don't freak out that we don't have any of the women on. But next week, of course, will be a full wrap-up of the Scotties. It'll be wall-to-wall about the Women's National Championship, of course, that we want to talk about. And but this week we found a guest, and we're happy to have him on. That's Tanner Horgan. You're there, Tanner.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, my pleasure to have you on the show. We might try and get to a couple other things. Warren's got his poll question that is lively as heck. Warren, how many on our Facebook group now do we have, Warren, who are
we've had a,
in all the
we've
time?
Had a very active week. We've increased by about 1,000 people in about the last 10 days, so we're up to nearly 4,000. So that's great. We've got lots of great comments and chatter going on there, and I hope people are having fun. We're enjoying it. It's interesting to see what everybody has to say about various things.
Clearly, they're in love with the host of the show, Kevin. Do you think that's...
Well, they keep asking the question, Jim, as to when are you going to go on the page and say something? They're waiting for you to come in there, but you just don't appear.
It's like a big teaser, Warren. I'm getting ready this week. I'm sure they're all breathless with anticipation with my take on the Facebook page. Boys, it's underway. Kevin, you've been down this road many times, Warren, so have you, about getting to play for the national title, to play for and get the Canadian championship. Let's ask you first, Warren, do you remember the first time when you qualified and finally made it to the Brier?
Oh, yes. I wouldn't forget that in a lifetime. It's kind of interesting. I was thinking about that a couple of days ago, and Kevin can probably say the thing of every time you've won a major event and you look back along the lines like a Brier and you've got to go through a series of playdowns to get there. And how many times that you escaped disaster by maybe an inch. And in the end you win, or maybe if in the end you lose, it's again by that inch. So it's a very difficult road to go down, and wins and losses at this level in many cases are that close. And I guess it's always caught being on the right or wrong side of the inch is what a lot of it is about.
Right. What about you, Kev? Can you take us back to that first moment when you looked up and said, "Oh my God, I'm going to the Brier"?
You know what? I've got a really funny story with that. The first time was 1991 Brier in Copps Coliseum, and we get to the airport, and Dan Petrick is on the team throwing second, and so we get to the airport. It's all good. We get on the plane. We're heading to the Brier. Fantastic, you know, unbelievable, 1991. And we land, and our driver His name's Otto Jaworski. We were friends from the time I met him the first time in 91 till he passed away. A terrific man. Anyway, so we're getting in the back of the van and we got all our stuff in there, and Dan brings his luggage in a garbage bag. He doesn't bring a suitcase or whatever. But Dan's a little eccentric and you know, but anyway, whatever. So that's all good. So we get in the van and let's go to a pool hall for a little bit and play some pool. And then we'll head to the hotel. And, you know, we're a bunch of young guys. Okay. Dan says, well, wait, Otto, on the way to the pool hall, could you stop at a laundromat? I don't have any clean clothes. So Dan, I'm telling the truth. Yeah, Dan, on his first trip to a Briar, he had a garbage bag full of clothes, but not one of them was clean. So we all went and played pool, and Dan, he went to the laundromat and washed his clothes so he could have a fresh clothes for the Briar.
What a great story, and that you developed this relationship with your driver. I mean, that's 30 years ago, right? So 91?
Yeah, yeah, cool. 30 years ago, and a terrific guy, and yeah, we just got really lucky, I guess, with being our first Briar and having a person like that. And I just remember he worked for Greb Shoes, G-R-E-B. He worked for Greb Shoes, sure. Fantastic guy. And unfortunately, a stroke got him, but a dear friend for a long, long time.
Is it life-changing, Warren, for someone to make this week to go to the Scotties for the first time? Does it turn their life upside down?
If it's the first one, I think without question, and particularly if they think they have a chance of winning, I mean, there's huge pressure and huge tension, and it's a wonderful experience. I mean, Kevin mentions drivers, and that could be a whole show one day of talking about drivers that various people have had. And I'll bring back a little story that when I worked as the team leader in the 80s, I went to two world championships with Al Hackner's team. And the first one was in Garmisch-Partenkirchen, Germany in 1982. And the gentleman ended up being the driver for the team, owned a jewelry store in Garmisch-Partenkirchen. And we all struck up a relationship with him that continued. And he went back to Thunder Bay at one point and visited the Hackner team. But I was there again in 1992. And although he wasn't a driver then, he was still there, still a jewelry store. And again, I think him and I had lunch, and it was another wonderful time. I got to tell you that I went back over to Switzerland in 2016 when I was inducted into the World Curling Hall of Fame and decided to drive over to Garmisch to see how things were going over there. Hadn't been there for a while. Walked into the jewelry store, and there he was. Over 30 years later, the guy was still there, and we had a long chat. And so that's the kind of things that drivers have, impact they have with teams.
Yeah, and it's all volunteer, right, Warren? People don't always understand, right? There, how many volunteers are there to put on a Scotties?
Well, if you're doing a regular Scotties, I would guess back you're probably around about 250 today, maybe 300. Briar today is probably 400 or 500. Back in the old days, Briar could be 1,000 volunteers.
Is that right?
And I can remember the one Briar in Saskatoon, 1989. I think they had 1,400. Mind you, I think 400 of them were in security. But nevertheless, they did have that many volunteers. So,
Well, we're going to talk about the Scotties, but before we do that, we're breaking from our normal protocol. We want to bring our guest on. Tanner Horgan is our guest. Tanner, this is great to hear from Kevin and Warren, who are retired curlers, who lived the dream, who experienced the dream, who achieved their dreams. And you're a guy who's starting out. You're 23 years old, I think. Is that what you told me, Tanner? God, you're young.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, 23.
And you're on your way there. You're on your way there as a great curler. You're six times you've been to the Canadian Juniors. You've medaled three times, a couple of silvers and a bronze. And now as a men's team, curling out of Manitoba, you whipped through had a 14-2 record and ended up curling against Brad Jacobs. I think, have you done it a couple times now that you've curled against Brad?
Well, many times now, yeah. Like I played against Brad quite a few years ago, and you know, the first few times you play them, you get your butt kicked, right? And then eventually you get a little better, and you get more used to it. And we've kind of evened out, or at least my old team, when we got to play them, we kind of evened out the record. We were 2-2 in the last four games that we've played Brad, and they were all at provincials and in those, you know, high pressure games. So, I mean, like at those provincial finals, we did extremely well. Mm-hmm. It was So two provincials, and we went 7-0 in the round robin in both of them, beating Brad in the round robin. And then, unfortunately they came up big in both finals and won the game that mattered. So we didn't get to go, but, it's a learning experience, and, I had a really good learning experience in 2018 when we lost our first provincial final. Brad's team was kind enough to bring me along and show me the ropes a little bit at the Brier. And that was a very, very valuable experience. And I'm very thankful that I got to have that experience. Mm-hmm. And I think, like you guys were kind of alluding to before about the Scotties and going to your first big national event. And I kind of got to break that in a little bit, right? And there's a lot of things there that you're not really prepared for when you go to a juniors. Mm-hmm. Certainly the bigger building and playing in front of, many more fans, juniors, it's mostly just your family members and your the team that you went there with. But you have a lot of true curling fans, especially when we were in Regina. So just getting used to all that stuff. And then I figure, when I go back again some days, a skip, hopefully, it's just not that foreign of an experience for me. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think certainly playing Brad Jacobs in a final after you have beaten him in the round robin, you probably get to really experience high pressure curling. Because I imagine after you've beaten them in the round robin, they're kind of have their game face on in the final. I'd like to hear your thoughts about that, because I don't know if there's any more intense athletes on the planet than the Jacobs team, especially if you would have beaten them in the round robin. The niceties would have been over, I think, maybe.
Yeah, it was an interesting week for sure, because we didn't really have that high expectations going in. Before that we didn't do overly well at the provincials, and then all of a sudden we're halfway through the week and we pulled them in the draw, and we actually beat them big. We got a big end on them, and then we end up getting the bye to the final, and yeah, they were, but they always bring that intensity too, right? So you kind of expect that out of them. And then in a provincial final, it's just, it's all business for sure. And funny enough, that event was a pressure cooker because of the fans too. It was in Little Current. I don't know if you guys know where that is. It's on Manitoulin Island. And it was in this small arena, but they just filled it with fans, which is incredible. And your expectations when you go first in the round robin and you're not expecting it, all of a sudden your expectations are a lot higher for that final, right? You can play a lot looser if you didn't beat them in the final, if you didn't beat them in the round robin, right? You don't know what to expect, but we started off the game with hammer and we got a little bit of a lead, and then all of a sudden, oh my God, we could actually kind of do it, and then we get up three, and then your heart's pounding, and I remember, the most intense part of that game was I made a difficult shot for two to go up three. And I just remember the crowd was incredibly loud. And for a small building with not that many fans, it was just incredible to see how many people were into it. That was the most intense game I've gotten to play in for sure.
We want to talk to you more about it and your team and living the dream and what you're trying to shoot for, and some of that's obvious. By the way, Tanner, I'm born and raised in Sudbury, so I know all about Sudbury and I know all about Little Current. When you ask people, do you know Little Current? And when I explained it to, say, guys like Kevin and Warren, who would have never been there, Little Current is I'll give you an idea how small that town is. A big trip is going to Sudbury. Okay. That's a big trip if you live in Little Current, but it's the great North. It's really good. And there's a ton of curling fans up there. So let's get into it, Kevin. The Scotties, as I said earlier, we're recording on Tuesday afternoon. So the evening draw is about to happen when we do this. There's seems to be lots unfolding, but you're the best suited for it, Kevin. Give us an update and what your thoughts are, and then Warren, we want to hear from you breaking it down.
Well, I think I just want to start with just talking about the bubble a little bit. You mentioned it earlier, Jim, but Curling Canada has done an amazing job of getting this off the ground. Can you imagine all the logistics of trying to get the Scotties and the Brier and event after event after event after event for 70, 80 days and being able to make sure that the athletes and the ice makers and the judges and the officials and all the people are safe. And so far I have talked to, I've talked to the ice makers. I've talked to some of the athletes and you know, the first few days are tough. You're in a bubble and you're quarantined for the first few days. That is hard without question. But then once you're out of that, you're with your team as a cohort and you're battling, you're competing. It's odd. Yes, it's very unusual to have a national championship in a bubble. But wow, you know, they've just done a heck of a job to make it happen. So I was talking to Mark Shurik today, and I'll let Warren get in here, but I was talking to Mark about the bubbles. I thought that the ice makers were a bubble, and then the telecast, like the TSN guys and crew, were a bubble, and then the players. But I guess the ice makers are in with the players in the same bubble. Mm-hmm. But the cameramen, who I thought would be with the players because, of course, they're on the ice, they're actually with the telecast crew. So okay. It's quite an interesting way to keep people separated. And that's why it's so impressive what Curling Canada has been able to do. And that's keeping all these groups separated to make sure everybody stays in their own bubble. Very difficult to do, but it's coming off, I think, very well. But Warren, what do you think? What's going on in Calgary right now?
I think so far so good. The curling has certainly been interesting. It's been a little different as far as the atmosphere is concerned, but I think also as the play, we've got a couple of teams that are doing some pretty interesting things that weren't expected out of them from a positive. And I think the whole thing has been phenomenal, and I'm hopeful that they can keep it going. And I hope that we're still talking about this in May, when maybe the last events are taking place there, that it's all been a huge success and it's all been able to happen. So I think it looks great. And I think it's going to turn out to be an interesting week here towards the end. And why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the ice issues and the stones that you've been talking to Mark about?
Yeah. So, you're talking about Mark Shurik. So Mark Shurik's helping with the ice in this occasion. And then when it comes to the Grand Slams, Mark will take over doing the ice, being the head ice maker. That's kind of the way it is. Greg Owosko, who's fantastic, he's the head ice maker. They're allowing 8 ice makers. That's it. Usually they have a lot more than that, but because of COVID, they've only got 8, but they've got a really good group of 8. So they've got fantastic ice makers. So I talked to Mark this morning just about, it seems to me late in the game, players are having a tough time making really good draws around center, anywhere near that 4-foot strip down the middle, a 4-foot wide. I just wanted to hear his thoughts. And he doesn't feel it's the ice. He thinks the ice is really quite good, especially like early in the game, people are having no trouble. Like they're locking freezes on the 4-foot, no problem early in the game, but late they're having trouble. And usually to me, that's why I phoned Mark. Usually to me, that means that the rocks are a little bit, last night on our Facebook group, I put scratchier. Some are scratchier than others. So I'm not sure how you want to say that, but early in the game, when the, early in the game, when the pebble's nice and sharp, the rocks will really glide along nicely. But once it gets a little flat, then the rocks that are a little scratchier than the others, it's almost like they have teeth, and those ones will go. And if you saw Kate Cameron, her intern, she threw an intern with lots of rotation, and it was going down the sheet, no problem. It just kind of stopped turning, went the other way. That's kind of indicative of that. Yeah. When the rocks are sharp, scratchy, and the ice is getting flat, then they start to grind. And the ones that aren't as scratchy tend to float.
Yeah.
And that's why you're seeing some of these top athletes, they'll slide to the back 12 and miss the guard by 3 feet. And then the next one takes about the same ice, throws it, and they're barreling onto the guard. And that's why I had to talk to Mark. And he just thinks that the stones are a bit of a problem, but they will get better. He says as they use them more and more, they will get a little more consistent. Right now, they've already been sanded twice. So you always sand rocks before a big event like this. They sanded them once, and they couldn't get any speed out of them. 13 seconds hog to hog was as good as they could do, and that's just not quick enough for a championship ice. So they sanded them again, and that's very unusual, trying to get a little more speed, which they have. It's faster now, but still there's quite a difference between some of the stones in the last 3-4 ends of the game. So people listening to this, pay attention to that when you're watching the Scotties this week and the Brier next week. Pay attention to the last couple 3 ends and how rocks are reacting. You can learn a lot of what the stone's like by what you see happening on the ice.
I think the other thing with those type of stones, which is like a newly sharpened rock, they become very release sensitive. And you can see that when the players let it go. So if they put the stone out there very positive and put it right to the broom. It often will not react, whereas if they let it go soft and let it kind of come out of their hand easy, turn in it a little bit, it'll go. And that's what you see happening as well, is the fact that the release of the stone becomes very important with regard to what the rock might do at the end, along with the right weight combination. You can see, as Kevin says, they can take off or they can just go straight.
What? Wait a minute here, Kevin. So you're saying some of their
just wait their a second here.
Yeah, just hang on a sec. So some of their draws, whether you say it was an intern or outturn, are missing the target by 3 feet.
Yeah, I was just watching. Missing online. So
yeah,
and what you're going to see, Jimmy, is if all of a sudden that rock is sliding like that, not curling early, because it's a straight line, it's not curving, it's going to be heavy. That rock's going to be back 8, back 12. But then all of a sudden, the same broom, but the rock starts to move more because it's a little bit scratchier. It's a little more abrasive. And it starts to move early. And generally, it'll end up crashing the guard and being a little light. But it could almost be the exact same throw. It's really interesting when you get late in the game, when the ice is getting a little bit flat, the true colors of the stone come out. And that's right. That's where it's really important to match the rocks. And it's very difficult. And that's where, you know, Jules Olchar has owned that part of curling for the best part of 30 years or 35 years. And that's where these teams really need to concentrate on matching stones, not early in the game when the ice is all beautiful and crisp, but when it's getting flat. That's the trick, is getting these matched stones at that point in the game when you have to make the most important shots.
Right.
I think the other thing is, back in the old days, we used to have to worry in arenas about frost lines. And so you had to really be conscious of where you started the rock. And if you got it started too soon, it was going to cross into that, again, frost line too quickly, or cross out of. And that's the thing that they're dealing with here right now. It's almost like dealing with frost lines. They more or less have to feel where those spots in the ice are and, again, release their stone accordingly.
So Kevin, is this highly unusual, or is this kind of standard stuff when you have these big spiels and national championships? That the, because it sounds like it's a pretty serious issue to me. If the rocks aren't running the way they're supposed to, what do they do? What happens if it keeps going on all week?
And it will. It's maybe a little bit more than normal, but it's certainly not unusual. But the trick is to match them. Like it's no problem to have two rocks like Kate had. Right. She had one of them only, unfortunately, and the other one was a lot straighter. But if you have two like that, no problem. Just take an extra foot of ice. Make sure you have tons of rotation on it. You'll be fine. Yep. The last thing you want, though, is one like Kate's got where it's so grippy, and then you've got a slippery one as the pair.
Right.
Now you got trouble. How do you it drive you crazy as the game goes on? So it's all about matching and getting used to the conditions. And as to Greg, Mark Shurek said to me, it's going to get better as the rocks wear in. But it'll be a little tricky even as we go forward through the bubble, no question. And, that's the way it goes. Not every set of rocks is as good as another. And that's just all part of curling. That's no problem.
I think the good thing you said too, is a safe way to be releasing a stone right now is with lots of rotation. If you put the rock down there with lots of rotation, you can probably pretty much predict what it's going to do. It's the ones that probably aren't put well to the broom that become the unknown.
Well, it's working well for a few of the teams. Regardless how bad the work that needs to be done on the stones, we got people who haven't lost a game yet in the two pools. Warren, I've never felt more Canadian. A few circumstances. One is when the Grey Cup is. I always do. The Olympics, of course, always make me feel Canadian. And when the Brier and the Scotties are on, I got it on all week. It's really because of you, whether people know that or not, Warren, about the work that you did and in growing the sport and getting it to where it is. And really, you're the guy who is allowing people right now to watch hours and hours of coverage on curling. When I think of the Scotties, Warren, and I think of the growth of women's curling, I think of one name, and I think of Sandra Schmirler. I got to meet her. I was lucky enough to meet her before she died. Am I right, Warren, in saying that she would probably single-handedly, because what she did at the Olympics, her cause, her fight, with cancer, that she would be the number one name or right up there with the impact on women's curling and the growth of it?
Well, certainly Sandra had a huge impact, and she was one of the most predominant players at the Scotties level throughout the 90s. And of course, I think the big thing was She won that first Olympic medal for Canada back in 1998, the women's gold. And that was an unbelievable accomplishment. She virtually got an airplane in Tokyo and flew straight back to Regina. And it was like she went from the airport in Regina straight into the arena where the 1998 Scotties was being played, and she was playing in it. And I was there that day she arrived. It's one of those things you'll always remember. It was like a hero coming home from the war. The building was completely packed. People were on the streets. It was a phenomenal experience. And she certainly made a mark in curling that was beyond anything that probably ever happened before and will always be remembered. So she had a great impact.
Kev, you've obviously, you know, Sandra, but you guys would have been at the Olympics together then, Kevin.
I know that not 98. We were 92, 02 in 2010.
Right.
So I know she went with Mike Harris in 98, but we went together actually to the World Championships in Bern in 1997 in Switzerland. And that's where we got to know them really well and got to be friends. And then actually Sandra and I were both honorary chairs of the Heckscherway Scholarship Foundation. Mm-hmm. So we got to be friends being on the same board of the Heckscherway. So yes, a really good friend of mine, and it was a terrible thing to lose her, but boy, her name has continued in time. And I'm not sure if her name doesn't keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger with time. So that's fantastic. And, well, and Jimmy, 700,000, I think, was raised on Sandra Schmirler Day during this Scotties. I don't think I'm misspeaking. I think it was a little over $700,000, Jim. So
yeah,
just fantastic. Amazing. The work that the Sandra Schmirler Foundation is doing and doing a lot of good.
And the greatest smile and laugh ever, you know, she was, I really, Warren, do they still do it when they raise that dough? I think since that all started, there was probably no internet or as much use of social media to raise money. Because originally it was, Warren, you came up with the idea about passing a bucket during a break in one of the between ends in one of the games where volunteers would run down the aisle and then everyone would throw in some dough. That's how that Schmirler donation started, wasn't it?
No, actually, the foundation was started in 2000. And one of the initial ways of collecting funds for the foundation was to do the crowd sweeps at all the major events.
Right.
So that was started back in about the same time. And of course, the major fundraiser for the event has been the telethon done by TSN on the first Sunday of every Scotties Tournament of Hearts. So that goes back again all of it to 2000.
Right.
When it all started.
Always out of these events, Kevin, of the Scotties that we're talking about this week, there's always kind of a darling team that sort of develops a story of a team. There's always seems to be some sort of drama. Someone comes out of nowhere. Someone's doing better than they're supposed to. And conversely, someone's not doing as well as they should. The team from Quebec, as we speak, they're 4-1. And I was reading about this young girl, Laurie St. George, who's the skip of Team Quebec. She curls out of Laval-sur-le-Lac and the Glenmore Curling Clubs in Quebec. And her team's known as the Curling Rockstars on Twitter. It's a great story. If you listen to her in her pressers that she does, she just talks about how great it is to be there. She's done incredible things, an 8-6 comeback over Suzanne Burt of PEI. She had an 8-7 victory over the undefeated wildcard rank skip by two-time Canadian champ Chelsea Carey. She faced three opposing in the 10th end, and she ended up stealing. She had an unbelievable draw and ended up stealing. Her dad is the coach. Her sister's on the team. She's going to curl with her boyfriend in the mixed doubles. They got a table in their living room with curling stones. She talks about being addicted to curling. They're throwing stones on a frozen swimming pool. And her uncle, okay, has a backyard rink that they've been practicing on. They had not thrown a stone before the Scotties. And that team is 4-1. I love this story, Kevin.
Well, I do too. And but you know, going in, yes, we don't know this team like a Jennifer Jones or a Team Holman or a Team Anderson, but they actually were ranked number 11 in Canada and number 40 in the world. So it's not a real big stretch, Jimmy, that they're doing well.
Right.
But you're right. And they're at 4-1. As people know, we tape on Tuesday, so you know you won't hear this for a couple of days, but she only has Saskatchewan, Newfoundland, New Brunswick left to play. So she's been through most of the major hitters in her pool. So looks real good on her to have at least 6 wins through this first, this first round, if you want to call it that. So good on her. I'm not really horribly surprised, but it sure is nice to see. You know, they're a strong team. It's not like
she could win it. You know, she could win it though.
Well, yeah, I certainly, yeah. Right. You know, the only thing that to Tanner's point, sometimes the pressure builds up. You know, we'll see that little necktie get a little tighter as we get deeper into this week. But they're doing fantastic so far.
All right. Well, she skipped she skipped the 3 Canadians. We'll see juniors.
I will go so far as to say she may get very close, but I think in today's world, when you got teams like Canada and Ontario who are going both pretty well, you're going to have to really play well to get by those top teams in the end. I think, you know, the old days that was possible, but she may do very well. But I would be very surprised if she could do well enough to win it. But this is a year where these kind of things can happen because players haven't been playing very much. And as a result, you could see anything take place. So she could have a good shot at it. Suzanne Burt from PEI has been going really well. She's up there, I believe, when we're doing this show at about the same record as Quebec. I think a couple other teams, BC, Corinne Brown has been doing well the last day or so. So there's a number of those young teams. I think the Peterson team, who has come on stronger here in the last couple of days, struggled a bit at the first, mm-hmm. young as well. So I think it's a good thing to see these young teams there and to see them doing as well as they are. And we wish them all the very best as they get towards the end of the week.
Okay, so you know what I'm thinking, boys? You know what? All of we may be providing karma, Warren, for a lot of these women right now. Corinne Brown we had on the show. We had Carrie Anderson on the show. We had Emma, the third from Rachel Holman's team, Emma Miskew. Caitlin Laws, she's got a 3-2. She's on the positive side. Thank God it's going that way, because if it went the other way, no one would come back on the show. Great stuff. Great stuff. And we'll be talking about it all next week and how it all played out for sure. Anyway, given all this, Warren, everyone who got to the Scotties got there a different way, right? There's no, with COVID, of course, there's been a number of different ways that teams get there. There must be positives and negatives about it, but I would think we don't get to see Team Quebec, Warren, if they didn't do it based on, I think, a point system where they got in there. So that brings me to the question about the format and about how many teams should be in the Scotties. I think that had something to do with our poll question as well, Warren. Where are you at, Warren, with that, about format, or let's say not so much format, but the number of teams who get in?
Well, it's interesting. It becomes somewhat confusing. I mean, I'm looking at that young team from Quebec, and maybe they would have won the Quebec playoffs this year. Maybe they wouldn't have. I look at two of those other young teams from Manitoba, Peterson and Zacharias, and under a normal year of having 16 teams in the Scotties, it could be another 4 years before you'd see either one of those teams again, which, again, just simply isn't right. So the Scotties was 16 teams. This year it's been made 18, and because it was made 18, Zacharias and Peterson both got in. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there. And in the previous shows, we've talked about maybe we should move it up to 20 teams if we're going to go with this format, because at that point, we at least ensure a lot of these younger teams that rank high on the Canadian ranking system but don't win the province are still going to be in it. I mean, look at the Scotties this year. We got 5 teams from Manitoba. Well, if we have 5 teams from Manitoba, that means there's 5 teams from Manitoba that are top contenders. And shouldn't we not be looking for a route so that they can all be into the Canadian championship? And I know we're still pretty much hung up with this provincial territorial playoff. So maybe the solution is the 20 teams, at least for now. So we at least make sure we include all our top-ranked teams in every Canadian championship. I don't know. Kevin, what do you think?
Well, you know, I'd like to hear from our next-gen guy. Like, you know, this is all about Tanner and people like Zacharias and Peterson and all these various young people, Corinne Brown and so on. Lots of young, talented athletes that would have a really tough time, depending on the province they come from, getting into our national championship. Let's hear from Tanner. Tanner, your thoughts on this number of teams and using CTRS points, provincial championships, 20 teams. What do you think? What's going on?
Well, this is something that I feel very strongly about. And it kind of came to a head a few months ago when you guys were starting to ruffle some feathers. And
that's Warren.
Not us.
All the good things are Kevin and I. All the bad things are Warren. Okay.
I'm used to it. I've been like that for 40 years.
Sorry, Tanner. Go ahead. I digress here. Go ahead.
But anyways, I think it was something that needed to happen because there was a lot of people that just hadn't thought critically about it. Up until recently, and you know, we kind of take things as the status quo, I think, too much, especially with curling. There's a lot of talk about tradition and that being somewhat the be-all end-all of curling. And you know, I listened to some of the stuff you guys said last week, and Kevin kind of said, you know, what does a purple heart mean to someone like myself coming up through the system? And my answer, I guess, would be it means something very differently to me than I think it did to Kevin and Warren back in the day. There's so much more to compete in nowadays that isn't the Briar and Scotties. And so coming up through the system, I really idolized you know, the slam teams and what they were doing. I like that there's a lot more events, and I just like the overall structure of those events more. And so if I were to make one of those events and play in many of them, that is more important to me than the Scotties and Briar now. So, but I think the Scotties and Briar play an important role in the development of young teams. And quite frankly, right now, I don't think it's really cutting it. I think the format is one that's so heavily based on equity that a lot of teams are really left on the sideline. I think that, you know, and it's kind of hard to talk about this and people, you know, think about me talking about this unbiasedly because of the position I'm in, and we are right on the cusp. You know, we were the first team that didn't get into the Briar this year. But I think there's a lot of other teams in our position that feel the same way, and not in our position that feel the same way. I think it's somewhat of an outdated system if you are trying to prioritize development of the teams coming up through the pipeline, right? I don't think there's very much going on right now that fully addresses this issue. I think this is a huge problem in our sport right now. It is, you know, we're not progressing as fast as the other countries. And I think the Briar and Scotties should be that place to grow your game. So really, I think it should move. Some form of it should move to a non-regional competition. Whether you want to like have two events and continue with the Briar and the Scotties as somewhat of an amateur event, much like kind of Matt was saying on the podcast a while back, I think if you had, you know, a true national championship that was purely CTRS and had some qualifiers come out, maybe from the Briar or Scotties, I think that would be fine. But I think we're really missing the boat on this. I think there's a lot of teams just left on the sideline that could do quite well in the current fields.
So, good for you, Tanner, for having strong opinions. Yeah, this is really good. This is really good stuff. I just assumed everyone would say we gotta have a Briar and we gotta have a Scotties and a national championship on some sort of format the way it is. So, backing up to what you said, if I heard you correctly, which I know I did, the Scotties or Briars for your generation is not as important as winning slam events.
Well, I wouldn't that's a, I think an oversimplification. I think it's a more of a personal, just value for me. Like, you know, I that's just where my goals are at, right? Like I'd like to curl professionally someday. I think that's a big goal of mine. If I could, you know, quit the job and do curling for a living, that is, you know, just fantastic. I think that is where I would like to go. And so I think the slams are more conducive to that. There's a lot more money, and I think there's going to be more money in the future. I just think, and there's two different issues here too, right? It's not that you wouldn't take going to the Briar and the Scotties. Of course, it's such a big event. And I still, you know, there's a lot of, you know, good feelings towards that as well. I just think if you're looking at the overall system that's put in place to developing young athletes, I think that is something that's getting in the way.
So who should be able to go to the Scotties? How should you qualify to get there? Well, who should be allowed to get there?
It depends kind of what you want to do with it. You could continue on with the Scotties the way it is and you create a new event. And then the winner of the Scotties would no longer go to the World Championship. I think that's kind of an idea that's been floating around now for a few months, or I don't know how long, but to me, I think that would solve a lot of the issues. I think you would have this great playdown system that has worked for many, many years. You would continue with that. But then you would also create this new event that, and you can put a positive spin on it too, and you can market it properly as well. But I think if you created this new event where you have all the high performance athletes, you know, not all of them are professional, mm-hmm. that's for sure, but high performance athletes, you'd have all them there based, and they would get in based on points. You could have a few teams make it in from the Scotties and Briar. I'm not opposed to that. I just think that if you're going to run a national championship, it should include all of your top teams, right? You shouldn't be investing money in teams and investing like a lot of time and energy, which they are doing, and then having a lot of those teams just sit on the sidelines at the end of the year. I think that just doesn't make any sense.
Right. So let's get rid of the provincial boundaries that are there now, Tanner.
Yeah, I would in a perfect world, I'd like to see provincial all that go by the wayside as well. I think in no other sport do you see that many restrictions placed on your top athletes. I don't think it makes any sense. When you're looking at, you know, winning medals on the world stage, you're limiting all your best athletes. It doesn't make any sense. But I think there is a place for a proper playdown system, right? You should still have the right to enter into a men's and ladies championship and work your way up. I just don't think that you should be forced to play the reigning Olympic gold medalists in your local playdowns.
Right.
Yeah, it's system that has outgrown time, and it worked well for many, many years. But as I've said 1,000 times, the Olympics and the Grand Slam changed a lot of things and the development of a ranking system. And we know things today we had no idea about 30 years ago. And as a result, that's changed everything. 30 years ago, we didn't know who the top teams in the country were. And we also didn't have the development at the minor level that we have now with a lot of these young teams. I'm really impressed with some of these young teams as to how good they are at the age they are. And it's not fair that they don't all get to play in the national championship. That's what I said in the post last night on Facebook. Great for that young Quebec team. And because they're in Quebec, they got a good chance of coming out of that province on a pretty regular basis. But now let's go to Manitoba and those two teams, Peterson and Zacharias, who also have great potential. But if we continue with the current system and don't change anything, it could be 5 or 6 years before you see either one of those teams at a Canadian championship of Scotties, because who's in front of them? Fleury, Jennifer Jones, and Einarsson. And and they're not going to develop if they don't get the opportunity to play at this level that they are right now. And for another 5 years, they're just not going to develop quick enough. And it's hindrance, and it's really not fair.
Kevin, what do you say to our young Tanner, who's going to be the head of the Curling Canada here in about 10 minutes? How do you react to that, Kevin, what Tanner said?
Well, you know, I don't think I need to. That was really well said. What I think needs to happen for kids like for Tanner, I hope you don't mind me calling you a kid, because you're really young. Is. You're really, you are actually. Yeah. Exactly.
How does Warren feel?
Yeah. Yeah. Grandpa. Yeah, exactly.
You and I think he's a kid. Warren must think, oh my God.
But I appreciate you just openly. I think it's really important that people your age who are the future of our great sport talk like you just did, completely openly, completely honest, say what you think. And I really think that, you know, guys, people like yourself, I said guys, but when I say guys, I mean guys and girls, get the Players Association strong. We need people that speak like you to really carry the ball and go forward. And I don't need to add anything to what you said. You spoke very clear and very well. And to me, it's just really important that you young people get together and build a strong Players Association and carry our, it's your game to carry forward. It's not mine and Warren's.
Yeah. To go more into the Players Association, I think my opinion on it is, I think it could be the single most important thing that our generation does within curling. I think, you know, you guys have laid the ground, you know, the groundwork for it. And I think it's time that we finally take what you guys have done and finally put it together. And I think it's so important. I think it could be the glue that brings all of the various stakeholders together. You've got all these different stakeholders, Curling Canada, Sportsnet, TSN, WCF. And frankly, right now, the way I see it is they're all somewhat acting in their own self-interest. And maybe that's putting it a little harshly, but I think what the Players Association could do is it could be that that voice between them all, right? Because right now there's you know, it's hard for them to all work together, and because the common denominator is the players, right? They play in all the events, and they should have a voice when you're trying to change anything within these events. And I just think it's so important that we get this thing going.
You know, you talk about these things, you know, the two networks that broadcast, you got WCF, you got Curling Canada, and you say they're on sort of on their own agenda. I don't know if I quite see then, Tanner, how that would prevent you from developing as a curler, though, because I sense you're saying that there are certain things that are holding the Gen Z guys back from developing as a curling team.
Well, I don't know if it's our generation entirely. I would more look at it as it's holding Canadian Gen Zs back. You know, like there are these guys that I used to play against in juniors, like to name a couple, Mowat and Schwaller. And you know, I'm a little younger than those guys, but there were, you know, guys like Calvert and Dunstone. They used to play against them in juniors, do quite well. You know, Calvert won a World Juniors. Matt was very close at a couple of them, and it. Quite frankly, they got a lot more support along the way when they came out of juniors, right? And it's not the curling, and to put a disclaimer out there too, it's not that Curling Canada is not trying. I think what they've done with the Next Gen program is actually quite fantastic. I think the whole concept of it is great, and I really appreciate all of the time, effort, and money. And just in resources that they've put into it, I just think it could be run a little bit more optimally as all. I think, and that kind of leads into some other things I'm kind of seeing as well. A top next gen team. If we take, for example, Matt Dunstone, you know, next gen, and that team doesn't really fit in my mind. They're there. You know, they won a Grand Slam last year and made the prior playoffs. I wouldn't classify them as next gen. So my point is I think the funding system right now with the national team programs is extremely top heavy. And I think that's one of the issues. For example, a next gen team would bring in about 1/5, 1/6 of a national team. That's just really only a few spots higher than them on the CTRS ladder. And so when it's that top heavy and you're trying to, you know, bring these teams along and keep them down the pipeline, this is kind of the problem that we're seeing right here, is that there's not enough money for teams in our position to keep going, right? We're kind of at this age now where you kind of have to make a choice, right? Everyone's starting jobs and there's a lot of new stuff coming into people's lives. Mm-hmm. And really the biggest constraint is a financial constraint. And I think there could be things that could be changed to really help with that.
So it's kind of the 80-20 rule, that the 20% of the guys are making all the money or getting all the funding.
But getting back to what he originally said, Jim, he's absolutely right in the fact that these organizations are all operating in silos. And they're not communicating with each other, but they do have a common denominator. It's the players. Mm-hmm. And the athlete cresting thing is one very good example. Curling Canada has one set of rules. The WCF has another set of rules. TSN has a set of rules. Sportsnet has a set of rules.
Oh, I see. Right.
And it's the same players, but that's just one example of all the things that aren't being worked together. And I always like to go back to golf. And what brought golf to where it was, and what brought it all together was the PGA Tour. And who drove the PGA Tour was the golfers. The
players, yeah.
It's the players. It's the same thing here. The players are the ones who can drive this bus, and they can bring everybody together. But they first of all have to get together. It's not just the Canadian players. It's the world ones. They all need to get in the same room, and they need to get these other people in that room, and they need to start to work out a whole pile of things that need to be dealt with.
You're right. You know what? You're right in Warren's kitchen, Tanner. Okay, you're right in Warren's kitchen with this stuff, and I kid slightly, but it's totally interesting what needs to happen, and I think everyone agrees. We often talk about it, but I think everyone agrees that it's your generation that we need to hear from and what they want. I guess before we leave this topic, then Tanner, we're gonna hand you the crown right now and say you get to make three changes right now in curling. Okay, and what would they be? What would they be to summarize all this?
Yeah, you get three wishes.
Three wishes. I think one main issue that I see right now is I think it was a mistake to shrink the Canada Cup. I think that could be a very good opportunity for a team like ours and or slightly below ours to get some experience in. And to Warren's point too, it's not just experience that we're after, right? We need some exposure. We need some cresting. And I think Curling Canada is trying to do it all a little too much. You know, if they feel like they have to fund every team fully, there's just not enough money to go around. So I understand that. But if you created it, if you expanded that event and, you know, showed us on TV a little mm-hmm. bit and allowed us to wear our sponsors, that would go a long way, right? We could probably bring in far more money just from that one event and being allowed to go to a sponsor and say, hey, your logo is going to be here on TV. We could make more money off of that than what Curling Canada could ever offer us through Next Gen. And I understand there's a lot of constraints there, but I think they're trying to do too much. That's just one thing. Another thing I'd like to see the Scotties and Briar format changed, or I'd like to see a new national championship created. I'd like to see... generally the theme I'd like to see, would be to separate the high performance from amateur kind of play down system. I just don't think they're compatible. So I'd like to see two different systems. And then, I mean, a third thing I'd like to see too is some of that funding changed as well. I think there could be a little bit more, tiered kind of system to it. I mean, yeah, it's very top heavy right now. And if you want to, you know, it's fine if you want to give us what we're getting, but don't expect in 10 years when all the top teams retire to have someone to go to the Olympics. You know, we're all going to grow up and get careers. So, that's just the way it is.
Good for you. If you like what you heard here, folks, and you want to react to it, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us insidecurling@gmail.com, and we're on Twitter at Curling Inside, Facebook at Inside Curling, and Instagram at Inside Curling Podcast. And jump onto our Facebook group. I'll get on there this week, Warren. I'm going to have something to say because I love this kid. I love Tanner.
Everybody's waiting for you, Jim. They're all saying, where's Jim? Where's Jim?
Okay. Great job, Tanner. Also, we've been doing some Zoom calls. We've done 8 of them so far. And if you'd like us to do a Zoom call with you, me, Kevin, and Warren, with your curling club, we'd love to do it. Get a hold of us. You can email us, and we'll set that up. It's worked quite well. One we did was at the Barrie Curling Club, and they had some great input as to what to do with curling clubs, their junior membership, as a matter of fact, Tanner. They have a great program there. So, and they were very eager, sitting down with pen and paper when Warren and Kevin were really advising them what they think they should do. It was great. So if you want a Zoom call.
We're doing one next week in your backyard.
Where? You didn't tell me, Warren. What's going on?
Where? Huh? The Thistle Curling Club.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
See? He's
yeah. Well, it sounds Warren's good. I'm excited about that. Fantastic.
Yeah, it's not that's, just me then, Martin, okay? Yeah, it's not me.
Breaking news.
Well, that's great. Fantastic stuff. You're going to generate, Tanner, a lot of interest. And I'm sure we're going to get a lot of emails. It'll be tough to how we're going to fit those in next week because we got the Scotties wrap up. So, Warren, let's go to the poll question, okay? Because this has something to do with formats and how many teams should be where and all that jazz.
Yeah, really interesting. So, of course, the Scotties and Brier this year are both going to have a different playoff, and the fact it's going from four teams to three. So we thought we'd ask the question on our Facebook poll as to what people thought of that. And I'll give you a little history in the fact that prior to 1979, the Canadian men's and women's championships were determined solely and totally by a round robin. At the Scotties in Montreal in 1979, for the first time, a three-team playoff was introduced. It was introduced the following year at the Brier, and it was that way until 1995. But let me first say, when we introduced that three-team playoff way back when, there was screaming about how unfair, it just wasn't right. The round robin was the only way to declare a champion. So in 1994, we made it even worse, and I won't even get into the reasons why we got the page system, but there were some good reasons. So we came up with this playoff that had actually been used in Quebec by Mike Carson, who had developed it in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. Page system was originally developed for rugby, I believe, in Australia. And the concept that was around the page originally was it was for a pool type of playoff. So if you had pool A and pool B, in the playoff, the first of both pools would play off, and the winner would go to the final, and the loser would drop down and play in the semifinal, the winner of the 2-2 game. So we took that thing in 1994 and adjusted it slightly, still call it the Page Playoff. We said we were using a 12-team round robin. We'll take the top four teams. One would play two and go to the final. Three would play four, go to the semifinal, and the loser of 1-2 would go to the semifinal. So we introduced that in 95. Again, was there screaming? How could we do this? It wasn't right. It was a money grabber, et cetera, et cetera. So it continued to go along. And this year, because of time, they've had to go back to the three-team playoff, which that's what will be taking place on Sunday. Two will play three, the winner will play one. So I asked the question, which playoff system do you believe is the best? The three-way one that's going to be used this year, the Page one we introduced back in 1995, or maybe a playoff that the United States uses that they call a modified Page, which is used when they probably have less than 10 teams involved in the round robin. The modified Page has one play two in the first game, and the winner goes to the final, and the loser plays three in the semifinal. So interesting enough, I thought, well, this three-team playoff, they're going to probably all think that's where we should go in the future. Like about 92% want to go back to the Page, want to stick with the Page. A very few want the three-team, and even fewer than that want the modified Page. So there you go. Curlers again. Right. Don't like change.
Right. Well, although Warren, so the Page system now, there's four playoff games. The three one, there's only two. So there's half as many playoff games. I want more playoff games.
Yeah, and that was the other issue. But the other issue that we had when we changed that back in 1995 was also with the three-team playoff. The other problem you had, the Brier and Scotties round robins were ending at noon on Friday. And back in those days, you were reserving two draws for tiebreakers, which again is a topic of another day. Mm-hmm. And so I can remember the Brier and Red Deer in 1994, the round robin ended Friday at noon and there was no tiebreakers. So now he had all Friday afternoon, Friday night with nothing. He had one semifinal game Saturday afternoon and the final on Sunday afternoon. So the whole thing just dropped off the cliff. So it was proven at that point when an event where you're trying to develop momentum, create fans, create viewers, it just didn't work well. So that was one of the reasons that the Page was brought in and started in 1995.
Yeah, consideration. So, Kevin, what do you want? Three teams? You want four? Do you want modified Page? Do you want Jacobs to have to arm wrestle?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, what do you want?
Yeah, you know, I played the three-team playoff a lot. But with that, to Warren's point, you need to think about tie breaks. So if you're going to allow tie breaks, that's probably not the best system, because then if there's no tie breaks, you've left a bunch of time for it. So now there's a big lull. So that's no good. Now, if you get rid of tie breaks somehow, and have the semifinal final on Sunday, you can tighten this event way too long.
Yep.
So now you can can squeeze it up, maybe start on a Tuesday. That'd be great. And have the semifinal final on a Sunday, no tie breaks. It really cleans up the event nicely. So it depends. If you want tiebreakers, then you go Page. If you don't want tiebreakers, go the three team playoff.
Right. So that's what fans want. What do the players say, Kevin? What, or Warren, do you get an indication of what the players would want? And we'll ask Tanner too as well, but what do you say, Warren?
I've found probably over time with what Kevin has said, I think most of the players would lean towards the three-team playoff if given a choice, I do believe.
Okay. What do you say, Tanner?
Yeah, I mean, the three-team is nice. I've talked to a few people about it, and it is a nice thing that you get when you win the round robin, you get a bye to the final, which makes sense to me. To Kevin's point, I think, yeah, it is hard to work a clean draw when you have to have all these tiebreakers and then you don't have enough time. If you're going to condense it into that way.
I'll tell you what, when I don't like the three team is when I place fourth. That's when I don't like it. I'm dead against it. Okay.
Very good.
Where's the page? I got a shot
so
here.
Tiebreakers will be another show because that's another good topic.
Kev, there's lots going on though. People think it's just the bubble event. You've got more news than that. And you got a very interesting deal about how they're going to take ice in and put it in, take it out, put it back in and change a bunch of stuff. Fill us in, Kev. What's going on with the events?
So we've had emails from various people wondering about, is the bubble over at the end of the world men's? Because that's all you're hearing on TSN, because that's what's on TSN. So I'm just going to go through the whole schedule here. Let everybody know that because after the world men's, of course, there's two more events, minimum. So the Scotties, which is on right now, goes from February 19th to the 28th. Then the Tim Hortons Brier goes from March 5th to the 14th. So that leaves 5 days between the two. And there's a reason I'm saying that, and it'll all come home here in a bit. You've got the Home Hardware Canadian Mixed Doubles, March 18th to 25th. So that's 4 days between. Then you've got the BKT OK Tire World Men's. That's April 2nd to 11th. So you've got quite a few days actually between the mixed doubles and the worlds, and there's a reason for that. And then you've got the Humpty's Champions Cup, and that's a Grand Slam event. So that's now not on TSN. That'll be on Sportsnet. And that's April 14th to the 18th. Mm-hmm. So that's only 3 days between the World Men's and the Humpty's. Okay, so this will all come. There's a reason I say that. And then the Princess Auto Players Championship, April 20th to the 25th. Okay.
All in Calgary.
All under the same bubble. Yeah. And then a little birdie told me there might be one more event, but I can't say it. So I'm not going to.
Okay.
And that's after the Players Championship. So that's what's going on. Now, I talked to Mark Shirk because there's not many days between. And you can imagine, everybody, that there's a lot of logos need to change. And in some cases, the houses need to change. But they're inside the ice. So how do we do that? So between the Scotties and the Brier, how they're going to do it is they're going to dig out with an edge cutter. They're going to cut out the logos, chop them out, and then level the ice, put in the new logos so that, and then flood. So ready to play for the Brier only a few days later. Okay. Then when the Brier's done, they'll do the same thing before the Home Hardware Mixed Doubles. They've got to change a bunch of logos, but they can do it with just chopping out the old logos, leveling underneath, putting in the new logos, flooding, scraping, getting ready to play. Okay. Now, after the mixed doubles before the worlds, it's got to all change. The entire look changes because the World Championships and Curling Canada don't have the same look. So they're actually going to take a Zamboni and they're going to take the ice down all the way to the houses. So cut all that ice down so that it's all gone except for the houses. And then they've got to put in all the new logos, build up the ice, and getting ready to play. Okay. Now, between the Worlds and the Slams is tricky because there's only 60 hours from the time the men's Worlds ends to the time the Grand Slam starts is only 60 hours. So how are we going to do it? Well, the only way that they could figure that they would have enough time to do it is what they're going to do is not take anything out. They're going to paint it all white. Like cover all the stuff from the world, paint it all white, and then put your houses, all the decals and all that stuff. And they think they can get that done in time to have a practice or two for the players before the first game, 60 hours later.
Wow.
That's a big
wow. What building is this taking place in, Kevin? Is that the Max Bell?
No. This is at the Wind Sports Center, the Olympic Center. Beautiful. We had a couple of Grand Slams there. And I think was there something there? Okay. Continental Cup or something, Warren?
I heard that was there, yeah.
Yeah.
It was 2015.
The Continental Cup was there. So
pulling your leg.
Beautiful building. But the amount of work these ice makers have to do to go from one event to the next, because you got to remember all those logos are different. So it's really, really interesting with the amount of days, how they're able to do it. And of course, it's all different depending how many hours you have, And is it from the World Curling Federation to Sportsnet, right, to the Slams to Curling Canada and all of that? So I thought that was kind of an interesting scenario.
Totally interesting. Totally. God, if you want to be an ice maker, you picked a bad year. You're going to have to work for, let's see, I just did the math. Okay. We're going to see you, Johnny. You're the new ice maker. We're going to see you Saturday, okay, at the middle of February, and you're going to be home at the last week of August, okay? Anyway, good for them. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
it's totally interesting. It's a lot of work, and they've been doing fantastic. And remember that, Mark told me today that, remember, there's only 8 ice makers. Usually they would have a lot of people to be able to 50. Do all this work. Yeah, they'd have 15 ice makers. They're not allowed. Only 8. So you can imagine that's why they have to have such, wow, a super 8 ice makers, like 8 of the best in the business. And they have to work together really well to be able to get these events from one to the next, to the next, to the next in time. Cause you can't wait to get the ice ready. It's, sure, got to be ready to go.
Is it digging logos out, Kevin? Is that the first time you've heard of that? Ripping them out, keeping the sheet of ice and then, you know, digging down and plucking out these logos?
Well, you see that in curling clubs sometime if a big event's coming in and, you know,
okay,
but so it's doable, but it's not easy. In big, in arena though, they'd usually just take the ice out, put it back in. There's no time. Like everything's tight between these events.
And things have happened. We've had to replace logos back in my day because of some problems with them once they're put in the ice and somebody discovers, whoops, that's not correct. So it has to be redone and replaced.
Tanner Horgan has been our guest today that we had on. Tanner, I'll tell you what, you were absolutely fantastic. Good for you again. Good for you for having strong opinions and wanting to be heard. You're going to go places. I know 2 other guys who are like that, Tanner, who have strong opinions and they need to be heard. Okay. So you're going to be right in there. You got a future in a podcast. Okay.
Well, thank you.
Tanner, before you go though, tell us sort of personally about your life. Give us the quick synopsis of what you're doing. You're from Sudbury, where I'm from, as I told you. You're in school. Bring us up to date on that and work and your team.
Yeah. So, I'm in full-time school right now. I'm looking to finish up my degree in the next couple months and start a career. And then, you know, see how that fits in with curling. I think it'll all work out fine. And I think it's lined up real good. And then on the team right now, we've got Colton Lott, Kyle Deering, and Emerson Klimke. And mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we didn't get to curl this year, but we did get to practice a little bit throughout the year. I was a little lucky here in Sudbury. We only had to stop curling for about a month and a half there. I've been practicing as much as I can. Obviously, I'm a little busy right now, but a lot of training, a lot of just getting ready, and hopefully it can all be worthwhile in next year if we get to play in a pre-trials or trials situation.
Good for you. Is the pub still alive and kicking at Laurentian University?
It's not. No.
Oh, that's probably my fault. I might have single-handedly closed it down from my summers there. Tanner, thanks a lot, man. Good luck to you. Congratulations so far on a great career. Boy, as you said to me last night, we chatted for a couple of minutes. You're like a point away from achieving your goals. And I know you're going to do it. You're a great young man. And I think you're going to be the head of the Players Association. You're the guy. Appreciate you coming on, Tanner. Good luck the rest of the year. Good luck with your degree and good luck with your job and good luck with the team.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tanner.
Hey, thanks a lot, Tanner.
Boys, that was another show as we send Tanner off. Kevin. I didn't know, you know, you never know with a guest what you're going to get. Hey, Warren, you just don't. I know what I'm going to get from Warren. Okay. I'm going to get in shit all the time. Warren, you see how we had a little telephone conference this morning. I tried to brush over some stuff. I said, okay, Warren, we don't. Yeah. No, Jimmy. No, pal. Here's what we're doing. And you were right, Warren. You were right on what we did today on this. Cause I didn't know how the format would go. But you just don't know what you're going to get with a guest. And all our guests have been great, but holy man, Warren, this kid must be music to your ears, what you heard here today.
Yeah, I'm really great to hear what he's got to say. And a lot of his similar youngsters are the future of the game and are ready to start carrying some things forward. So we're wishing them all the best of luck, and anything Kevin and I can do to help, we're here.
Yeah. Kevin, this kid is your style. Has to be your style. This kid has your name written all over it from when you were breaking up curling leagues around the world.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of work back in 1995 with Rob Krebs to get the constitution of the players going and get the Players Association started. And it takes a ton of work. And you need some good people. And within 10 minutes of Tanner talking, that's what I was thinking right away. I'm going, yeah, all right. Yeah, this sounds like a person that might have the will that you need to be able to take on the powers that be and get some good changes made. And you know, I hope that's the case.
Yeah, you know, it's good because over the last several weeks, right, with our show, we've been sort of, you know, been, I don't want to say negative, right? It's constructive criticism, but a lot of it has been that the game has to change and that the future is going to be in trouble. Warren, you've been very outspoken about that, that the future of the game needs to be looked at, needs to be discussed and needs to be some big changes. And you wonder how you're going to do it. And then you get a guy like Tanner who comes on and you listen to him.
I look at it a different way. You said the game could be in trouble. I don't think so. I think with people like that, the game's going to be fantastic, grow right through the roof. So there's two ways of looking at this thing. There is some changes that need to be made, but I'm not looking at this negatively at all. I look at it very positively. There's some, it's one of the fastest growing sports in the whole world, curling, right now. And we just need to do it right in our country.
I again look at golf, and it was the players getting themselves organized that finally really moved golf into a new world, because it was like curling is right now. It was all divided and everybody was going in different directions. And to a very large degree, looking after their own little corner of the world. And it was the PGA Tour that brought them all together. And even though people like Nicklaus and Palmer were against it, in the end, it turned out to be the whole thing that brought golf to where it is. So I hope Tanner and all the other youngsters we've talked to are able to pull some things together and get some things happening.
Kevin, don't get in the habit of correcting me, okay? That'll take 3 hours of show. Boys, what a great week. Do we want to try and go in? I forget what we did last week. We did some predictions on the Scotties. We're midweek. This is Tuesday. The show will air on Thursday. What do you think, Kev? Any surprises, or do you think it's all going to sort of lay out to the top three or four teams?
Well, the only surprise, I guess, if you want to call it a surprise, would be Quebec doing so well and looking like, a real good chance of making the playoffs. You've got Team Holm and Team Anderson doing well, which of course is not a surprise at all. And Suzanne Burt doing very well. And that's not a surprise to me at all, because we picked her on this show last week. So not a lot of surprises other than Quebec's doing great and good on them.
Hanson?
Well, I think echoes to some degree what Kevin's had to say. I think Canada and Ontario right now are showing themselves as being a little bit ahead of everybody else, a step out in front. I think the other teams that still could be in there at the end of the day, we don't know yet. Alberta, Quebec, PEI, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Wildcard 1, Fleury, BC, and Wildcard 3, Peterson. I think all those teams are still in the running, but I think Canada and Ontario are the two to watch.
Let's get back to our TVs and let's watch some more Scotties, and we'll be back again next week with another episode. A packed, jam-packed. Kevin, you're going to get an interview for us, okay? You're going to find someone,
we'll find,
right, from the Scotties.
You bet.
Okay, very good. Take it easy, boys, and we'll talk to you next week with a full wrap-up of the Scotties. You've been listening to Inside Curling with Kevin Martin and Warren Hanson.